Good morning. If you'd like to be turning to Matthew chapter 8, we're going to be looking at Matthew chapter 8 and Matthew chapter 9 in the lesson this morning. So many good words have already been said this morning, spoken this morning, been very edifying and encouraging and instructive from Greg and Justin and the prayers that have been led, and really appreciate the good worship this morning. Greg has been studying with us on Wednesday nights in the Gospel of Matthew, and it's been a wonderful lesson. I don't know how many of you all are in that class. Raise your hand if you're in that class. Okay, there's a lot of people who are not in Greg's class. They're back in the back in other classes, or they don't come on Wednesday night or whatever, that are here today. So I don't feel like I'm trampling on Greg too much by preaching for Matthew chapter 8 and 9. The joke is, of course, that I'm going to fix whatever he got wrong, but that's just a joke because he didn't get anything wrong. But I thought there were some good lessons for Matthew 8 and 9. His class on Wednesday night provoked my thinking on that, and I wanted to share Matthew's unique presentation of Jesus' miracles in chapters 8 and 9. Our focus, however, is not really going to be on the miracles this morning. There's 9 miracles, really 10, if you count the woman who touched Jesus as part of the story of Jesus raising the daughter, woman's daughter, from the dead. You count that all as one miracle, which is I'm doing for convenience sake. So you have 9 miracles in Matthew 8 and 9. And we tend to focus in on those miracles, and they're there for a purpose. They serve multiple purposes. Of course, one is to convict people that Jesus is the Christ, that he had the power to do all of these things, and therefore we ought to listen to him. He is who he says he is. And we also know that these miracles convey some degree of spiritual lesson in them. For example, the healing of a blind man can be spiritually understood as the healing of our blind eyes in terms of how we see truth, that we have the light now. We can see the light through the healing that comes through Jesus' message. So I recognize that there's a lot of value and a lot of importance in looking at the miracles themselves. But what I'd like you to notice is that there are 3 teachings of Jesus in between these 3 sets of 3 miracles each. What you have in Matthew is a structure where you have 3 miracles in verses 1 through 8, 17 of chapter 8, and then Jesus teaches. And then you have 3 more miracles, and then Jesus teaches. And then you have 3 more miracles, and then Jesus teaches. And I'm going to focus in this morning with you on the teachings of Jesus in between these 3 sets of miracles. And it's not to say that those miracles don't teach us something. They do. And we'll play off of what they are focused in on as we look at the teachings of Jesus in between these 3 sets of 3 miracles each. Matthew is unique in his structure. Matthew does not focus in on chronological order like Luke does and like Mark does. Matthew focuses in on a thematic order. And so you'll remember that in Matthew 13, for example, almost all of Jesus' parables are in that one chapter in Matthew 13. That's intentional by Matthew. He's combining all of those things. And so most of Jesus' miracles, almost all of his miracles, are contained in Matthew chapter 8 and 9. And so Matthew is structuring his gospel differently than Luke and Mark. He's structuring it thematically rather than chronologically. So it is interesting to look at that and notice that Matthew has a point in all of his chapters. He has a focus. He has a theme that he's working on. And it's interesting to observe that. Now, let's look at Matthew chapter 8 and just talk about the miracles a little bit and then move quickly into the message of Jesus in his teaching. So you have the healing of the leper in Matthew chapter 8 beginning, and then you have the great story of the centurion's servant. Greg focused in on that a lot on Wednesday night, and about how Jesus noticed that this man's faith was greater than any faith he'd found in Israel. This was not a Jew, this was a Gentile, and his faith was greater than any that Jesus had found in Israel. And so he healed the man's servant because the man had faith that Jesus had authority to do so. He said, look, you don't even need to come down to my house. I know that you have authority, and I'm a man of authority, and I know how authority works. So you just say the word, and I'll trust that it's done. And that's a very powerful message of faith. Jesus acknowledged that. And then you have the story of Jesus healing Peter's mother-in-law, which is really just a minor little story in the midst of things, but it's a miracle Jesus did. And the thing I've always observed out of that is as soon as Peter's mother-in-law was healed, she got up and began to serve. And I've wondered, isn't that the point then of the healing that Jesus provides us when we are healed of our sins, for example, spiritually, when we are blessed with His mercy and His grace and His love? What does He want us to do? He wants us to get up and start serving. So again, there's lessons in these miracles that we can focus in on. But I'd like you to look with me under this theme of healing. So you have three healings in Matthew 8. And then I'd like you to start reading with me in verse 18 of Matthew chapter 8. Verse 18. If you have your Bibles open, you might want to follow along. I'm reading from the New American Standard Version. Matthew chapter 8, verse 18. Now, when Jesus saw a crowd around him, of course, he's doing miracles, he's healing. He saw a crowd around him, he gave orders to depart to the other side of the sea. And then a scribe came and said to him, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." And Jesus said to him, "The foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." Seems like a strange answer, someone who's offering you his following, and he just kind of pushes back on him. Are you sure that you understand what you're doing here? And then in verse 21, another of the disciples said to him, "Lord, permit me first to go and bury my father." A very reasonable request under most circumstances, wouldn't you say? Let me go bury my father. No. That would not be appropriate. You wouldn't say that, would you? No, you can't go bury your father. But in a sense, that's exactly what Jesus said. It says in verse 22, Jesus said to him, "Follow me and allow the dead to bury their own dead." And then you have three more miracles after that. So let's look at this teaching here in Matthew chapter 8, verses 18 through 22. You have to recognize this theme in what Jesus is saying. In both of the things he said, he's advocating for total commitment. Let the dead bury the dead. Very strange thing to say, almost derogatory. Let the dead bury the dead. What's Jesus getting at here? Well, I'm going to try to appeal to you to think about the big picture of what it means to be a Christian and to follow Jesus. "I will follow you wherever you go," the man says. And Jesus says, "You don't have any idea, perhaps, what you're volunteering for. Because if you really follow me, you're going to have to make sacrifices beyond really what you've thought of, perhaps. Do you really understand what it means to follow me?" Why would anybody want to follow Jesus? He didn't even have a place to lay his head. He was going to die. He was going to go to the cross and die. He did go to the cross and die, and his disciples followed him anyway. He told them that they would suffer and they would die and they'd be persecuted, and they followed him anyway. Why would anybody follow Jesus under those circumstances? And what Jesus knew is that unless someone did make, as Greg was talking about this morning, that full, total commitment, they wouldn't. They wouldn't follow him. You won't follow Jesus to your death unless you make a full, total, 100% commitment to him. You just won't. And Jesus knew that. Jesus knows that. And in his mercy, he spoke the hard thing. He pushed back. In his mercy and in his love, he said, "I'm going to tell you how it really is, because you're not going to make it unless you fully commit. Total commitment, willing even to die to yourself, to give up your own life So why would anybody want to follow Jesus? Well, maybe that speaks to the next thing he said. Let the dead bury the dead. What does that mean? He's got to be talking about spiritual death there. And what he's emphasizing then is, if you follow me, it's all about life. And that's why you would follow me. Because it's about life. He's contrasting life and death. If you follow me, you have life. And that's why we commit totally and fully to him, because he is life. He is the way and the truth and the life. In the here, and we talked about this last week, godliness, devotion to God, has what? Benefit. It's profitable both in this life and in the life to come. And we made an emphasis on that last week. You're going to have a blessed life. Oh, but Jesus has nowhere to lay his head. And I'm going to have to make sacrifices. And I'm going to maybe even suffer and maybe even die because I'm following Jesus. And you're telling me that I have a blessed life? That's exactly what Jesus was telling you and is telling you. And we had a big, long list of things I came up with from the Scriptures. We didn't spend much time on it. But all of the spiritual blessings in the heavenly places and all of the comfort and peace and joy and happiness, relationships, marriages, children, everything that God has designed to bless us comes through Jesus in this life and in the life to come. So trust. If you're going to follow me, you're going to have to fully, 100% commit in trust. Because that's the only way it's going to work. That's the only way you're going to receive life in this life and also in the life to come. So what does that tell you? That gets back to what Greg was talking about. We can't let this world and the chasing of worldly things get in the way of our commitment to Christ. We've got to put our mind on things above. We've got to remember that as we live and as we work and as we pursue our well-being here on this earth, that our commitment to God comes first. First. And that mindset will help us so much to avoid so many problems of the world, and will also bless us with rich relationships of love and grace and mercy and goodness. But we have to fully commit. Because if we don't, then we'll have one foot in the world and one foot in the kingdom, and you cannot serve two masters. You're going to love the one and hate the other eventually. And so, let the dead bury the dead and come and follow me. So you see the fundamental nature of that teaching. Jesus heals, right? Three miracles of healing. But what does he heal for us? He heals, among other things, our futility of life, of having no meaning and no purpose without God. That's the writer of Ecclesiastes. All is vanity, all is futility. It's meaningless because everybody dies and everything goes away. And so what's the point? I build all these things. I have all these pleasures. What's the point? Well, the point is that life without God is futile. It's empty. It's meaningless. And Jesus knows that. And so full commitment to God gives us purpose, gives us meaning. Now we have a focus. We know what life is about. As Greg was talking about today, about serving God and about helping others and about bringing people to God and to Christ. Life. True life. So think about that in terms of how you're living your life. Are you fully committed? And if not, how can you become fully committed? What do you have to do? How do you want to think about yourself and your life? What changes do you need to make and get help in accomplishing? Because without that full commitment, it will not work. Second set of miracles, power. You see that theme running through this next set of miracles. Power over the storm. Who is this man? who has control over the wind and the seas. Who is this? Power over the demons. Cast them into the swine and have the swine run over the cliff. Power. And they were in great fear when they saw the swine fall over the cliff. They'd never seen anything like that. Power over sin. When he healed the paralytic, he healed the paralytic to show that he had power to forgive sins. And that's what he said to the paralytic, your sins are forgiven you. Power is clearly the theme running through this next set of miracles. But read with me verses 9 through 17. Really two stories here, or two teachings of Jesus, but they're very closely related. Matthew chapter 9, beginning in verse 9. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man called Matthew sitting in the tax collector's booth, and he said to him, follow me. And he got up and followed him. And then it happened, as Jesus was reclining at the table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were dining with Jesus and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, why is your teacher eating with the tax collectors and sinners? But when Jesus heard this, he said, it is not those who are healthy you need a physician, but those who are sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire compassion or mercy and not sacrifice, for I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners. We're going to look at that in just a moment. Now read verse 14 with me. Then the disciples of John came to him asking, why do we and the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast? So you see the theme of the Pharisees running through both of these sections here. Pharisees are challenging Jesus, and now the disciples are saying, the Pharisees fast, but why do your disciples not fast? And Jesus said to them, the attendants of the bridegroom cannot mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them, can they? But the days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast. But no one puts a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch pulls away from the garment, and a worse tear results. Nor do people put new wine into old wineskins, otherwise the wineskins burst, and the wine pours out, and the wineskins are ruined, but they put new wine into fresh wineskins, and both are preserved. Okay. What's he talking about here? Again, a fundamental truth that we need to buy into with all of our heart. Because Jesus is all about compassion. He's all about mercy. And basically what he's saying to us is that you need to change your heart. You need to be a fresh wineskin. And I can't put my gospel, my message, into an old wineskin. It's going to burst. It doesn't work. And so you need to change your heart. And you need to change your heart toward mercy. Now this is one of the basic foundational teachings of the New Testament, of the New Covenant. God is gracious, God is merciful, and we need to be merciful like He is. James says that mercy triumphs over judgment. Judgment will be merciless to the one who has shown no mercy. Jesus, God, is all about mercy, and our heart has to be filled with mercy. We have to be a new wineskin. We do not necessarily tend toward mercy. You may think you do, but in your flesh you do not. You tend towards harshness. You tend towards judgment. You tend towards accusing, complaining against, thinking poorly, despising people, even hating people. You tend towards that. I tend towards that. And so the heart has to be changed in order to understand the foundational concept of mercy. I desire mercy, Jesus said. Go and learn what this means. And he was talking about the Pharisees who were despising sinners and despising people. Why do you eat with the tax collectors and the sinners? This is foundational. And I've said this, and I went to Ocala and did a one-night meeting with Ocala. They do a Wednesday night during the summer where they have other preachers come in and do one night from a study. And my assignment was Jesus, apostle and high priest of our confession. And I think I say this pretty much everywhere I go when I have opportunity, is that I do feel blessed to be in a congregation that has such an emphasis on mercy and grace. And I think that's because, not just because, but certainly enhanced by the fact that we have the prison ministry. Not the church doesn't, but Daryl has the prison ministry that he does and brings people out of prison and into the transition program and then into the membership of the congregation here. And you think about that, what that really forces upon you and me. It forces it. We need to have mercy. We need to show grace. We need to forgive. We need to have hope. We need to believe. We need to love people so that they will grow and become different and be changed and have the blessings of Christ in this life and in the life to come. And it shows, it takes mercy. It requires mercy and requires believing all things about people and hoping all things about people. Just hoping and praying and believing that someone who has lived such a life and engaged in such activities will change because of Christ. And building that up and lifting that up and pushing that forward and creating that vision that Christ creates, that people change. Such were some of you, Paul said to the Corinthians, adulterers, fornicators, homosexuals, thieves, liars, and so on. I don't know if I got the list right there, but you get the point. Such were some of you. And every one of us can look back at our lives and we can see things in our lives probably that we deserved punishment for, perhaps even prison for. And so mercy and grace. Now think about that in regard to the fundamental teaching of Jesus and the blessing that brings upon us in our relationships. If you're going to have relationships, good relationships, young people, listen to this. If you're going to have a good marriage, you're going to have to learn mercy. You're going to have to learn mercy. Oh, you fall in love and everything is wonderful and you get married and everything is wonderful and it stays wonderful for the rest of your life and you have no challenges whatsoever. It's beautiful. I thank God for the mercy of my wife. And so we'd have to learn mercy and not sacrifice. In other words, he's not saying sacrifice isn't important, but it's down the list when it comes to mercy. Mercy is preeminent. And when you learn that, then everything is different. You get irritated. You get frustrated. You get angry with people. And you've learned mercy. What happens? It goes away pretty quickly. And you don't mess up too badly. That's what happens. And your relationship continues with that person because you've learned mercy. Tolerance, forbearance, patience, kindness, and so on. So you see this fundamental teaching of Jesus, and it's going to continue in the next section. Three miracles. The dead daughter. Please come and heal my daughter. Jesus is on his way to heal the man's daughter, and a woman touches him who's had a flow of blood for 12 years, and she's healed, and Jesus speaks to her and talks about her faith. And says that she's been made well. You have the two blind men who are calling out, Son of David, Son of David, have mercy on us. And he does. And he heals their blindness. And then you have the demon cast out of the mute man. And he's told, don't tell anybody. And he goes off and tells everybody. Because he's been shown mercy. And then you have verses 36. Or 35 through 38. You have Jesus teaching. At the very end of Matthew chapter 9, Jesus was going through all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. And seeing the people, he felt compassion for them because they were distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd. And then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest." Jesus, verse 36, seeing the people. Jesus, seeing the people, felt compassion for them because they were distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd. They were harassed and helpless, the ESV says. And so Jesus teaches us how to see people with our eyes. Because I don't see people all the time the way God sees them. And I need to. And it helps me so much when I'm able to. Because here are people who are distressed. They're in sin. They're coming to Jesus and their lives are a mess. You have prostitutes coming to Jesus, tax collectors, dishonest people, homosexuals, adulterers, fornicators coming to Jesus, sinners coming to Jesus, and their lives are a mess. How does he see them? With compassion. That's not the way I tend to see people sometimes. I'm getting better at it, though, I hope. Now I'm able to see a little bit differently, I think. Instead of being judgmental, instead of being harsh, instead of almost like despising someone for their choices and for their evil and for the wickedness that they've done, instead of seeing them that way, maybe I can see them with compassion and say, you know what? They're lost. They didn't have the light of God. And no wonder they're like this. No wonder they're going through what they're going through. No wonder they made all these bad choices. Maybe I can see them now with some compassion in my heart. And maybe then I can be gentle with them and kind like Jesus was and is. And instead of judging them harshly and thinking they'll always be like that, that they're never going to change, that's in their nature. Instead of thinking like that, maybe I can offer them the light. Maybe I can offer them Jesus and ask them, would you like to study about Jesus? Would you like to look and learn about Jesus? Because he can help you. Because you're distressed and dispirited, you're harassed and helpless, and you don't want to keep going like this, do you? This is not what you want. It's not what Jesus wants. So I think these three lessons are so powerful and so fundamental in our walk with God. I don't think I need to be convinced that Jesus is the Christ by these nine miracles. I believe that. I think what I need to do is learn these three lessons. Jesus heals our futility by giving our lives purpose and meaning. That's my anchor, ladies and gentlemen. That's my anchor. You think preachers don't get tempted to go do something different? Something that would require perhaps less sacrifice? That's my anchor. My life has meaning and purpose because of Jesus Christ. And therefore, I'm going to let him change my heart so that I can show mercy because that's what he did for me. And I'm going to see people the way he sees them so that I can help others to know him and to have what I have. So these are foundational lessons. And I hope you'll take them with you this week. And I hope that you'll be benefited by thinking about them. And whenever you read Matthew 8 and 9, now you know. Three miracles and a lesson. Three miracles and a lesson. Three miracles and a lesson. Appreciate your good attention this morning. We're going to stand and sing a song now and be led in prayer. And I just want to make it available to anyone who wants to ask for the prayers of the congregation before we go today. If you'd like to do that, please let it be known. Or if you'd like to obey the gospel, or you'd like to ask, what do I need to do to be right with God? Whatever you would like to know or to study or to do, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.